Hi, it's Connor from Erasing the Bar. Thank you for joining yet another episode of the podcast. Look, the days are getting longer, the future's looking brighter, and it's not long until we can have a pint outdoors, so please hang in there. This episode is sponsored by Farmyard Ales. You can get 15% off your orders from them using the discount code Erasing15 at checkout, and be sure to give them a follow on social media because they've got so much space for outdoor drinking. In the meantime, head over to Erasing_the_bar_podcast on Instagram for access to monthly competitions and to keep up to date with the latest episodes. Enjoy. Pete Obsolete, welcome to Erasing the Bar, my friend. How are you doing?
How are you doing, Connor, mate? I'm very well, thank you. Cheers for having me on.
Not a problem. I'm very excited for this one. I've got my turtleneck on just because it's a little bit more artistic. But
oh shit, he thinks he's a Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, hey, I can't get any better than Jeff Goldblum. What a guy! I mean, how the hell do I introduce you? Because you're an illustrator, you're an artist, you're a designer, you're a public figure in my eyes. How would you like to be introduced?
If someone asks me what I do, I kind of say creative illustration because it kind of is so vague. But it kind of anything that they ask after that I can kind of zone in on a little bit more, but it's also it covers that
nice
creative approach and illustration execution kind of thing, if that makes any sort of
I'm with you because you do a hell of a lot of stuff, so no, I'm glad you've hit the nail on the head there. Let's start right away. Pete Obsolete, how has that name come about?
Interestingly enough, I've been thinking I came out of uni and wanted to just do something to do with art and clothing. The first love was t-shirt design. And I kind of went through a few ideas. A lot of them actually came from the Mighty Boosh. I'll shout those guys out. I was an art student in Manchester University, in Manchester Met. Have to be specific. And I'd go around to my friend's house and he'd come around to mine and we'd just chill. And I saw this DVD on his, bedside table or whatever for probably about 6 months. Had no idea about it. My mate Carl, shouts to Carl Regan, put it on. We watched it. And they kept saying obsolete. They used obsolete in its correct form. So, nice. This is obsolete. And there was a guy called Pete Neon in that. And I was like, Pete Neon's a bit too blasé, a bit too kind of up. It's not really kind of the undertones that I'm kind of commenting on and stuff and all that. So obviously it came out from just hearing them use obsolete in that, and obviously rap as well. Quite a few MCs use it and rappers use it. And it rhymes with my name. So it's a very simple kind of, it stuck in my head and it's nice to say.
Yeah, no, it's a cracker. It is a cracker. I mean, you mentioned the Mighty Boosh. I'm trying to weigh up what era that will have been on TVs predominantly, because what age did you kind of start thinking, I'm actually pretty good at what I do now and I can probably start to make a living from it?
They're two very different questions. I consider art like ninjutsu. Like, you're never fully trained in it, even when you're deaf, never fully trained in it. But that kind of approach is a little bit too arrogant sometimes. And it's kind of, it's one of them where I love creating. It's a really easy way of expressing yourself. You can do loads of different things just with a pen and paper. I'm literally sitting here now, just in case I get the urge to draw. I hope you don't mind.
Hey, no, all good.
But it's one of them. But again, going back to the kind of the obsolete metaphors in there, obviously obsolete means outdated or kind of redundant. And I know that there are loads of other illustrators out there and I'm influenced by a lot of them and vice versa and all that sort of stuff. So admitting that I am obsolete means I can do anything. So it's almost like it's a self-fulfilling prophecy of, if I fail, I've done exactly what I set out to do. So it gives me a freedom by having that kind of metaphor in there.
There's no barriers really, is there, with what you do? I mean, you're probably free to be as creative.
Barriers are, that's the thing. I really think there's so much expressionism out there. And when you're looking at your phone, it kind of takes away from that. I know that's a kind of go-to, I hate technology thing, but it is that as soon as you put your phone down, everything kind of starts coming to you a little bit more, I find.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's true, isn't it? I spend far too much time on my phone. So I think the issue is with me, I've got obviously a day job as well. And I use that my phone for that as well. But I got a notification at the end of January saying your screen time was up by like 30% this week. You were on average 9.5 hours per day looking at my phone. And I'm like, I actually did a cleanse after that for about a week. And I felt so much better. I've gone back to doing it now, but I know what you mean. You're not looking at the world.
It's a difficult thing, isn't it? You can't. It's something certainly as independent businesses and independent businessmen, it's difficult not to kind of be fueled by that interaction. I love talking to my audience and interacting, whether it is socially in person or social media wise as well, that kind of social. There's a kind of, I don't know, there's, you're kind of always hunting that human thing that you're never going to get, but it's difficult because Instagram is based on an obsolete format as a Polaroid. So I actually like how the setup of Instagram goes. I don't, you know, it's not my favorite thing in the world. But yeah, I don't know. Do they allow you to wear roll necks in work?
You can wear whatever you want within reason. So I've never worn one. I've never worn a podcast before, to be honest. I was thinking, I put it on, took it off and put it back on. I was like, fuck it, I'm going for it.
Mate, I'm honoured. The first turtleneck. I'll make you a custom one.
We'll already do that. Talking about your artwork, can you remember your earliest piece of artwork?
Oh, well, I mean, wow, that's a big question. The story kind of starts where I'm a twin brother, so I have an identical twin brother. And a way that my mum and dad kind of kept us pretty busy as kids was just putting pens and paper in front of us. So we'd just have drawing competitions, draw the best trainer, you know, like just trying to draw Nikes with, you know, rockets on them or whatever, bikes and all that. So that kind of, that interaction with like the page and actually having the, it's really difficult for a lot of people to kind of break that page and just kind of put that first mark in it because it's so pure and white that you think everything's going to be a mistake. That kind of was never there for me and Matt. So it was kind of really easy to just go, okay, we can just draw and you'll learn to draw something good in the end. Quite hard to kind of instill that, especially in modern times with, you know, phones and Xboxes and et cetera, but I still think the best way of learning is that pen and ink mentality, which is where we came from. So the first bit of work that I remember is literally I can see the Nike trainer that I drew at my nan's house with Matt. I did design and technology in school.
Yeah.
And we had to build something for the final piece in art. And I decided to use all the stuff in my D&T work to build this weird kind of metal sculpture, something I've never gone back to. I've never even gone back to like welding or pot riveting and stuff. But it was like a disc brake with a saw blade on it, all rusted and dead angsty, and then like two exhausts, and they had lilies in it. It was a vase, and I ended up selling it at an art show, a local art show where I lived, and then had to buy it back because I missed it so much. And then it went into another art show in Nottingham Town Centre, in the Nottingham Society of Artists, sold. I missed it so much, I then had to buy it back off them, so I've still got it, just sitting downstairs in my studio. This weird kind of ownership over it, because it was the one of one, it was the only thing I'd ever done in that style. It was very strange. So that was the first kind of physical bit, but again, drawing from 3 or 4, you know, very early on, just to kind of keep us busy.
That's one thing I did notice as well when I was doing some research on you, looking through like your tagged photos and Insta, I was like, he's definitely got a twin brother here, because for ages.
You're not the first one to be like,
yeah. I was like, he's doing so. Well, you do so much anyway. But I was like, then I finally saw the picture of you two together, and I was like, I knew it. Bloody knew it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a personal trainer, so he's like the kind of balloon animal version of me. So it's kind of it's easy when you know us. And obviously, you know, for years we were always mistaken identity all the time.
Imagine.
But we kind of weren't in that. You know, we weren't put in the same class. We never kind of got off with each other's girlfriends or like went to each other's lessons, because I chose not to do history or geography, and there's no way I would be going to a history or geography lesson in school just for fun. So yeah, just one of them. Standard twin fare, I'm afraid.
Like it, mate. How do you think you describe your work? If you had to give it a description in one word, what would it be?
I mean, in layperson terms, forgive me for the terminology, it would be street art. But I think it's a lot more you know, I shiver at the word urban. Horrific. So urban art, you know, it's been classed as quite a few different things. I kind of go down the route of 80s expressionism, because then again, it's vague enough to kind of suggest black and white and colour, you know, full street art from New York, as well as kind of, you know, influences from the UK and, you know, Liverpudlian styling in the 90s, for example, you know, in tracksuits all the way through to that, to art from New York, for example. So it's kind of, again, creative illustration covers quite a lot. Creative illustration and 80s expressionism. Mm. But again, I try and use vague terms. I want whoever's watching or looking or buying the piece to kind of to assimilate it to themselves a little bit. You know what I mean? It's kind of, some of the work is specifically for galleries. Some of it is for clothing and you know, like, you know, what, like water bottles and stuff. So it's kind of, it kind of depends a little bit, but again, overriding kind of bracket would be, yeah, street art influences.
Like it. And you mentioned obviously some of those influences, and like all walks of life with any kind of artist, whether it be, you know, singing, whether it be acting, whether it be painting, there's going to be people that do influence your work. And there was two that when I was doing the research, two that stuck out really. And one was Keith Haring. Have I got that right?
I say Haring. I've never heard anyone. I have heard somebody official say it. So it's, I think it's officially Haring.
If I can't get Keith Haring right, I'm not going to get the next one right. It's Jean-Michel Basquiat, I think.
It's pronounced Basquiat. Haitian French, for the record. But yeah, those two guys, you know, it's very easy to kind of be influenced by two absolute giants in street art and, again, expression. I don't really want to say street art because, again, a lot of their work did end up in galleries. Jean-Michel Basquiat actually has the record for the most expensive piece of street art. It's just massive, beautiful skull, absolutely beautiful. 12 million or something crazy. But those two guys are very different in their approach. But again, they collaborated together. Their work kind of really is chalk and cheese with each other. But because of that, I felt like they work really, really well. A very illustrative style from Keith Haring, and a very super expressive style from Basquiat. You know, they're very, very easy influences, very true. It's the same with Warhol, but again, I think it's more the metaphors of why they were working, what they were doing, not necessarily the execution of the artwork or what it actually looked like. Mm. Like certainly with Haring, you know, he's managed to, or managed, past tense, RIP Keith Haring, he managed to kind of convey an incredible amount of information and metaphor and simile in one or two or six lines, and that kind of is very as an illustrator, it's very easy to bridge that gap. You know what I mean? I'm very much influenced by how Keith worked, his styling and his collabs. You know, we'll talk about the collabs in a bit, but that kind of, you know, he worked with Run DMC, he did artwork and, you know, photo shoots and live gigs and raised money for charity, and, you know, spoke about the problems in the world through artwork, raised issues on, you know, the horrific stuff about the apartheid in Africa in the 80s and everything through AIDS research and development. He was still painting in the last month of his life.
Yeah.
And I find that absolutely incredible resilience. Mm. The piece is huge. It's a whole side of a building, I think, in Spain. And again, so even without the artwork, like same as Jean-Michel Basquiat, had a full street art life as a graffiti artist under Sabo. You know, his mum put books of anatomy in front of him as a kid, so he's got a very figurative style thrown in with this kind of incredible kaleidoscope of sheer expressive lines and branding and logos and kind of metaphors of the 80s and stuff. They're just, even without the artwork, they're how and what they were and where they, what they have influenced in the world, you can't shake a stick at, like, because I think everybody's influenced by the 80s now. And if that's hip hop, Reeboks, your the cut of your jogger, trouser, cuffed leggings, whatever, you know what I mean? There's so many references to it that I think it's a really, you've just got a huge smelting pot of inspiration that I think if you kind of look back just 20 or 40 years now, my maths is terrible, it's you've got this whole world of inspiration that you can still see today, which I find incredible. That it's stood the test of time. It's gone through the 90s and the 2000s and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting you said. I think I read an article, and it was that John Michelle, when he was hit by a car, his mum gave him a copy of Grey's Anatomy. Yeah, and that's where his work comes from. It, I mean, it's incredible. It's interesting that you say that it still holds up to this day, and it does, because John Michelle, again, Jay-Z, Nas and Damian Marley, Rick Ross, you found his paintings in I Am Legend. I know you shared that in the past, and it's like, indeed, and it's like
things in Friends, and it's like, I know that's technically only, it's probably still in the era of Keith Haring being alive and, you know, a prolific artist that he was, but seeing it on the streets in New York, in the subways of the blank, you know, poster negatives that were there that he drew on, all the way through to the biggest, longest running whatever show in America, it's just incredible. Like, and that's, it's just the impact of how much metaphor in art and how simplicity can just convey so much message. It's crazy.
It's a shame, isn't it? Because both the lights were cut short. Jean-Michel died from a drug overdose in 88, I think, and Haring obviously died from AIDS in 1990, unfortunately. So, I mean, but if anyone's not heard of them before, I urge you to do a little bit of research. That's one of the best things about doing this podcast, is I would have never in a million years have researched these two guys and realized how big they are. And now there's a few YouTube videos, there's a few articles, give them a read, because I guarantee you'll 100% recognize the work. If not, you'll recognize people that they've influenced.
Right, again, yeah, complete. And the thing, you know, I consider myself a son of Haring. There's thousands of us. You know, I work with Dave Draws, who, again, huge influencer. He's a detailed illustrator, and he draws maps and patterns and stuff, amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. And then people like Mr. Doodle, some of the bigger names, even people, you know, I've forgotten my references. But that kind of, it's quite easy as a son of Haring to kind of see that line and know that someone's been influenced by him simply mm-hmm. from the way that they've drawn a circle or drawn a face or something. Mm. It's just amazing to be able to recognize it. But again, I think everybody would know their work. And it's quite easy to understand why you would know their work, because they work together. And again, with Andy Warhol in that three, you know, this is in one city in America, New York. You've got three absolute kings of their game working together, and whose influences just continue to get shown through advertising and, you know, illustration, and even through the bigger stuff like commercial, you know, even co-op. I've seen Keith Haring references in the co-op. It's crazy.
Well, obviously, you know, a little bit of a negative end to their lives, but onto more positive things.
Yes, please.
You know, coronavirus is still around. We're getting through that. But roughly about a year ago, you started doing Paint with Pete.
It wasn't roughly a year ago. It was exactly a year ago today.
A year today, really? Yeah. What are the chances of that?
I've got a couple of beers waiting for me. So,
Tell me about that, Pete. Tell me about what Paint with Pete is.
So Paint with Pete started at the start of the first lockdown. So yeah, a year ago today, March 24th, 2020. And it was just me in my front room of my old flat, just kind of wanting to paint and kind of realizing that I wanted a need to paint, like a purpose to do it. Like, I'm very happy picking a pen up and just doodling and painting and stuff. But obviously in lockdown, you know, it felt like a big pause button at the start. And I thought, I'm going to kind of waste my days a little bit if I don't just start drawing or start painting early in the morning, instead of being the cool kind of smoke a cigarillo in a window sill in black and white photos at 12 at night or whatever. I really was like, I'm a morning guy, so I needed to hit it in the morning. So I just started filming, putting four pieces of paper up in like a record sleeve, an empty record sleeve, and just painting and filming it. It started really working for me, and I started getting a bit more of an energy. Obviously, the hosting, you'll know about the hosting, kind of it gives you a whole new fire of like, you feel a responsibility to the audience and all that sort of stuff, right? And so it's kind of easy to know that I was painting. I did start talking my way through it a little bit, kind of going, this is what I'm doing, just kind of explaining. And then I started getting a few messages, people sending me pictures of what their kids had done, and they're following my lines and stuff. So I kind of decided to switch it up a little bit and then make it a bit more of a kind of you can do this at home kind of mentality. That was after a bit of a break after some, you know, work commitments and stuff from last year, working in Bury, and then came back and did a few specials. But at the start of this year, January the 18th was the first one for 2021. And again, that was a bit more structured. So every day was the same thing every week, but we did something different every week. So Monday would be doodling, Tuesday would be colour, Wednesday lettering, Thursday portraits, Friday gallery. So you get a full week. It's only an hour. We're only sitting there for an hour and painting and drawing or doodling or something. And again, it kind of sparked up quite a few really nice interactions with people. I've got, you know, the audience for the Paint with Pete's were absolutely amazing. They get to choose the colour of the paint. They can give me a random, you can make up a, you know, like, you know, violent brown or whatever. Yeah, I don't know why I went violent. But, you know, kind of a spiky pink. And I would have to try and make that. And then obviously you could also name the canvases. So you can name the, pick the paint, name the canvases. I put it up. And that kind of real interaction of giving people something to do and giving them a bit of, again, I said it this morning in the show, I don't really want to say inspiration. I just want that recognition that you could do something. That's it. I know that's technically the source, the baseline of inspiration, but that kind of just, you can do it. Just, you can try something. And if you need a company, I'm here drawing. There's a break halfway through the show, so you can put the kettle on, go and grab 5 minutes if you want, come back to the show. We keep drawing. End of every day, review it. On Friday, I have had a full gallery, so you can just see what we've done that week. Very, very simple. But again, I absolutely love it because of the interactions and knowing that people are joining me and keeping me company and vice versa. You know, it's a trade. It's not I'm here and you're there. It's we're together in this.
I love that.
Time that we can draw.
Art and crafts industry is absolutely skyrocketed on the back of coronavirus. So people have got more time. They're spending more time at home. There's not much to do. So they're putting the time and effort into that. So doing something like that to cater to needs of someone who might have thought about doing it before, but had other you know, things to do, such as going to the pub. I started the podcast because I was, it's a really good thing that you do it, and you should 100% keep doing it as and when we do get out of lockdown.
Well, interestingly enough, I did also announce today on the year anniversary, I do actually need to take a bit of a break from the Paint with Pete's from Friday, just because I've got quite a few different bits of work that I need to kind of finish up. So it's not going anywhere, it's not going anywhere to finish or anything, but I'm probably going to turn it into a bit more of a monthly thing. I was doing every Monday to Friday, 10 to 11, every single day, as much as I could with my free time. And, you know, again, I absolutely love it. And that's kind of turned into a fuel of knowing that there are people out there and, you know, there's a kind of, again, that kind of switch of energy where it's like, I know people are there because they're talking to me and suggesting colour, and that really fuels me to continue what I'm doing, which I absolutely love. So
you're teaching. You're actually teaching how to. Well, you're teaching people how to paint. So it must be very, very
not in the kind of. I know my Twitter tag is Snob Ross, but I know it's different from the kind of from Bob Ross or that kind of world of, okay, we're going to paint together and it's going to be beautiful. That's the Paint with Pete's were specifically about just doing. I really don't care what it looks like, and to the point where I want to see it. You know, I've asked, you know, I've got kids' drawings and parents' drawings and mates' drawings that just blow my mind. But it isn't that kind of, I don't care about shading. I don't care about form and shape. It's not, we do the basics, you know, how to create a bubble font and how to kind of mix a paint if you want to get it light and stuff. But it's all about experimental. And being experimental in that creative world, because that's where mistakes happen and that's where inspiration happens, I always find.
It can be as chaotic as you want. As long as you're getting a pen on paper or a paintbrush on paper, you're not bothered. Just getting people.
If anyone's feeling a bit awkward about their drawing, please just Google David Shrigley. Connor, please do that as well at some point. David Shrigley, he's like famous. He's a famous artist, first and foremost. I was at a talk with him in, where was that, Noise Lab, ages ago in Manchester City Centre. And he openly admitted he didn't know why people bought his work. Oh, no, sorry, it was in Home. It was in the corner house before it closed. Okay. He said, I don't know why people buy my work, because he'll just draw a weird horse and just put a strange word above it. And he's obviously got an amazing, he's not a very good artist, but he's not a very good drawer. He's an amazing artist, if I'm
concerned.
So please check him out. And again, same with Basquiat and Haring, those kind of mistake lines. Mm. That's what I'm looking for.
Love that. Absolutely love that. And you've drawn a lot of people in the past in obviously painting, and you've done the likes of Tommy Shelby. Who's next?
They've all been drawn. The Paint with Pete portrait day has always been amazing. Again, all audience interacted. So I've always asked the audience to come up with famous people or, you know, good faces or good celebrities with nice faces, whatever, to draw a sick face. In the Paint with Pete, I do like 20 minutes of how to do a structure of a face. Really, really simple, just eyes, nose, mouth. Create a silly character out of that and then use that template to draw a celebrity face in about half an hour, 40 minutes. That kind of all harks back to when I used to draw the sick faces, which were, it's probably nearing 1,000 drawings, I'll be honest. There's so many sick faces, and it all started with the battle rap scene from Don't Flop, and the MCs from Manchester, Blizzard, Shotty Horror. You know, there was Lunacy, majorly famous from Leeds, Soul, you know, that kind of the era of Don't Flop. And I just started drawing them. Yeah. And then ended up drawing I probably drew about 50 battlers, easy minimum. They all put their drawings as their profile photos. Obviously, more MCs want it. Why can't I have one? Let's draw me. Okay, Sam. So that kind of harks back to those drawings that I need to re-release and frame and get in an exhibition, because that era of battle rap, I'm a massive fan of the spoken word and rapping and battle rap and all that sort of stuff. So even the Thomas Shelby and the Jonah Hill and the Keanu Reeves and the Donald Trump from the Paint with Pete, they're kind of referencing a previous idea that was all focused on alter ego. Mm. Who's next? I don't know. I really don't know. I've got loads of different ideas, and I've still got a hat full of names from the Paint with Pete. So it's a case of drawing. Who's in the hat at the moment? Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, nice. You've got to do Rowan Atkinson. That's
such a good face. Who else is it? There's loads of people. I drew Billy Connolly as well. That was weird. He started looking like he looked really similar to Richard Branson at one point. And it was just, it's really awkward because one little line in a face can literally like dictate who that person is. Again, in the Paint with Pete, it's all about just trying and just kind of playing around and having a bit of fun. So those little half an hour drawings, I love them, but I don't know. It could be you, mate. It could be you. I do know who's next. Wow, it's really weird you ask me. I've just done a collab T-shirt with a guy called Shuffle T. He was one of the battle rappers that I drew a sick face off. He's still using that as a logo, which is mental because it's about 8 years old. Mm-hmm. The next two people that I want to draw are Dan Nightingale and Adam Rowe from the Have a Word podcast. They've both got incredible faces. Dan Nightingale is the king of the Frog and Bucket Comedy Club. I used to work there. It was amazing. He's one of the best comedians ever, like literally from the UK ever. And Adam Rowe, again, king of Liverpool stand-up. Absolutely hilarious guys. They've got a podcast called Have a Word. Because I've been looking at their faces so much over this year, they've got hundreds of episodes of their podcast. Yeah. They're just two faces that I'm really kind of, I need to draw. I just feel like I need to draw them because they feel like mates. It's very, very strange. But I think they're the two next ones. Sorry, that was a long, long answer. But
good. Yeah. I was actually looking at their podcast for the first time last night, believe it or not. So I'll give their podcast a listen as well. 100%. I'm not being to the Frog and Bucket. That is one thing that I want to do as soon as I'm allowed to. Moved to Manchester recently, and it's always been one that I've kind of wanted to go to. I've done the conference before, but Frog and Bucket is definitely one that I want to get involved in. So.
Honestly, look out for Dan Nightingale. Like he's I can't wait to see him kind of just do more shows. I need to see him live again. I just remember him live and he was just one of the best I've ever seen.
I'll give him a follow and I might even slide into his DMs, you never know.
Why not?
Talking about collaborations, so let's move on to collaborations, because like I said before, you know, being in the industry that you're in, you pretty much, you can do whatever the hell you want. You can work with any object, any shape and size. You probably see a wall and think, I'd love to draw on that. Do you know what I mean? So tell me about Obsolete Formats.
Okay, well, the format's is very new to the obsolete kind of armory. So the idea of, I've always had kind of Pete Obsolete as my alter ego. So he's the kind of excuse to do art, and I can do anything I kind of choose to in art. It's a very freedom given thing, not an arrogant thing. It's just a freedom given. With the format, you know, the collective noun of for the formats is kind of anything that's obsolete. And I've always had the kind of mentality that anything that leaves my right hand becomes obsolete. So as in me, not the meaning of the word, like to do with Pete Obsolete. It gets really conceptual when you're just, when you're an independent businessman with a weird name, right? I find myself in very strange avenues. Yeah. So anything that leaves, I'm going there, mate, screw it. Anything that leaves my right hand is obsolete. So anything that becomes obsolete becomes an obsolete format. So the reference to the formats of things like tape cassettes, VHS, Polaroids, you know, Super 8 cameras, all very 80s again. I'm an 80s kid. And so kind of that, anything that ends up under the obsolete umbrella becomes an obsolete format. But it's also that kind of, if it's something I haven't done yet, say if I did sliders, for example, say I customized some sliders or released some sliders, because I haven't done them yet, I would then consider, this is so stupid, the slider market obsolete because I've done one, if that makes sense.
It makes complete sense. It does. And I was one of the things that people do send to you, because again, they can send anything they want to you within reason.
There were two kind of arms to the obsolete. So the formats is a little bit more the street arty edges. P obsolete is the kind of humor. I'll stop talking riddles and use Instagram as a metaphor. So P obsolete on Instagram is my personal work and things that I do and the work in progress stuff. Obsolete formats on Instagram is the final versions. So the kind of working process is Pete Obsolete. And then when it becomes a format, it goes on to the obsolete formats. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So there's kind of two things. So this is a custom pattern for Most Wanted. Very simple black line pattern that they printed on a couple, you know, sweatshirts and stuff. So this is the obsolete camo. If you see something like that, it's called the camo. And if you see something like this, this is the rune, okay, R-U-N-E, as in runic and kind of Norwegian, kind of ancient writing that you would carve into a stone. The writing that you see on the bottle is from the rune family. And again, that's all from the idea of being a caveman. And if you had a stick and you wanted to leave your mark somewhere, you'd have to carve it into stone. So all the lines are really straight and aggressive. That's my reference. And then everything else is kind of the pattern that goes under the Pete Obsolete kind of bracket, because I'm the one drawing it. It's as simple as that. I mean, I don't want to sound too kind of big-headed or anything about it, but it is literally like anything that I draw just becomes an obsolete format. It helps me kind of separate it from being what's work, or not necessarily what's work, but what's kind of applied and what's created.
Yeah, yeah. I love that.
The riddles, man. No, I forgive the riddles.
It's so good. It's keeping me on my toes, mate. No, I love that. That's it's interesting. You mentioned Most Wanted. Most Wanted wines. Most Wanted wines. I've seen a lot of things that they've put out, and they always tag you in them, and they always look incredible. So tell me about that.
Dude, they're quite honestly, I mean, I love everybody that I've ever worked with. That genuinely, I've got, you know, I wouldn't put my name to it if I didn't stand next to it. Simple as that. Old school mentality again. Mm. Most Wanted came out from a bit of a collab with Art Battle Manchester. So I was an artist for Art Battle Manchester. I drew in front of 700 people in the spaceship, in the theatre, in the palace there. Absolutely incredible. Most Wanted were a wine company that sponsored, or like were collaborating with Art Battle Manchester. I just happened to love everything about Art Battle Manchester. So I'd be the merch guy and sell T-shirts. I then made friends with Sarah from Most Wanted. Shout out to Sarah. And we just got on like an absolute house on fire, probably the free wine and the T-shirts, and just being idiots, you know, standard stuff. And since then, we've kind of just worked on loads and loads of different projects, including, you know, they've made, I've done this, I designed this camera for them, and obviously customized wine bottles and stuff in the Paint with Pete's. We've done private Paint with Pete's with Most Wanted. They made a boom box, like a giant kind of bar with a boom box with my camera on it and stuff and banners. And what they're doing with the work is, I feel like I'm designing for them. It's very, very strange. Whoever's the designer for the most wanted Instagram posts that use my work, incredible. Like, there's a real care about what the camo can actually do and where that kind of needs to be brought into the product and to show their approachability as a wine company. It's just, you know, separate from me doing the artwork, they really look after the things that I've given them, and how we work together is just amazing. I love those guys.
They've nailed it. I mean, again, I'd definitely advise viewers and listeners to go and have a look at their Instagram.
I mean, first, more than anything, it's cracking wine. I'm not even kidding. It's my favorite Malbec. I've been a wine waiter. I've worked in bars for ages. Their Malbec is insane. Yeah, it's just, I'm a red wine guy. And that kind of, I know we're drinking beer, but having a fruity Merlot, that's like a raspberry and kind of a blackcurrant, like a hedgerow.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing. I've worked in crazy, you know, stupidly high grade restaurants, and that's still my favorite Merlot. And that's not on commission here. It's genuinely, genuinely good wine. They really look after the wine. Very simple branding. I think that's a really important thing with the wine speaks for itself. Simple as that. And again, I can only big them up. They're doing amazing things. A very, very creative wine company. They've really got a kind of really nice approach to the world.
Well, in that case, then I'm gonna try their wine, and I'm gonna send the wine to you to do a pattern on it.
Merlot.
Yes.
Are you red or white? What, red or white guy?
Red all day. The heavier, the better for me.
Dude, the Malbec. Serious. That's all you.
How popular are trainers with you? Is it in terms of people sending trainers over to you?
Wow. You're asking questions that I've been thinking about for absolutely ages. And again, you said curveballs later on, but it's weird that you mentioned the trainers. I haven't drawn on a pair of trainers for a while. I think the last pair I did was a pair of white leather Vans for my good friend Charlie Crosby, Crozilla. He's a male model on Instagram. He's a legend, absolute gentleman. He also hosts Overdrawn and works on Honest Cross Pizza as well, absolute legend. So I think the last one, was his. For anyone else, I've drawn on a couple of pairs of my favorite training in the world, the Reebok Classic, a couple of times. But again, you know, I've got a very specific size of foot, so I can't buy them and then sell them. I buy them and then draw on them and then just want them and have to wear them. So it's kind of a bit of a vicious circle. But I'm thinking of I'm just about to kind of step up my merch game. And the trainers and the shades, much like these guys, are kind of, you know, first on the list for things, because summer's back. I've got several new pairs of trainers that I'm waiting for the ground to be completely dry. Shouts to Ed Hampson for my first pair of Jordans ever.
Beautiful.
They sing. You know, they open the box and they sing at you. It's crazy. So they're not allowed to touch the ground until there's no water on it anywhere.
Might take a while.
Yeah, but mate, if you've got any trainers, I would love to, start that kind of process again. And again, with the two patterns and the camo and the rune, they both really work on trainers. My favorite trainers to draw on easy are the Air Force Ones, just because the surface area is just so big. They're so
hip-hop,
boy trainers, and the panels are so big and so smooth, and the leather is incredible. So it's kind of they're my favorite trainers. So if anyone's got any Air Force, give me a shout. I'll definitely draw on some trainers. I look forward to it. In fact,
one of my favorite pairs of trainers are just the nice classic white Air Force Ones, and I can imagine you can do quite a few things with them. So
yeah, but it's that subtlety. I've seen the trainer thing, you know, where people draw, you know, everything on trainers. But I think that I love the silhouette and I love the paneling. Just doing a little, you know, doing a swoosh tick in the room, and then just leaving it, or putting like a name on the back and then just signing it or something, just some little touches. But yeah, I mean, anything goes. But I also want to do the full, let's get all the paint out and just go, what can we do with a pair of Air Force? So yeah.
And as an artist, you obviously tend to get creative, Pete. That's why you're in the game. So tell me about some of the nights that you've been doing. So I know you've been doing some hip hop nights, quiz nights, mark nights. Tell me about that.
Well, okay. It all started with a hip hop night, to be honest. Shouts to Chris Seymour and Golden Egg Hip Hop. He's known as Seymour, the poet. Absolutely incredible. So I think I decided to go down to a night with my mate that was called Golden Egg. Never been before. It was in Fallow Cafe in Fallowfield. I don't know what name it is now. I can't remember. And just had a great time. Kind of bumped into Chris, who felt like my brother straight away. Like there was a real kind of immediate link.
Yeah.
And again, I know I've got a twin. I don't live with him. I miss him a lot. So anyone who's like a little bit like Matt,
yeah,
you're not going anywhere. And Chris was just an absolute gentleman, full hip hop head. He's an end of life care nurse. So he had this night. We got talking. I think we started talking about logos or maybe just poster design. Came down. He was the first person to kind of put a mic in my hand and say, you know, here's the mic, here's the crowd, and kind of really brought me out of that. Not necessarily reclusive, but very elusive. So I was always behind the camera, filming, art directing, being away from the kind of, you know, the focus. And then Chris just gave me a mic. And since then, it kind of really helped the hosting. We started hosting, rapping together, dropped an EP, shout out to Dead Kings. And then from there, I kind of realized that I could do that. If I can host a hip hop night, which is pretty hard, not necessarily hard, but there's a lot of egos in the room, absolutely fine with that. A lot of alter egos in the room, also very important. And then kind of decided that, okay, hosting could be a thing. Around that time, probably about a year after Golden Egg, maybe a bit after, I went down to Overdrawn. So I was asked to draw at my friend Dave Draw's night. I had no link directly apart from we were both sons of Herring and illustrators in Manchester.
Yeah.
Drew all night, had a great time, realised that they kind of needed a host to kind of guide people and kind of give people permission to draw. So then Overdrawn started. I started working with Overdrawn. And that was just incredible. We took over so many different venues, and that was we covered the tables in paper, then we put pens out, write silly little ideas for drawing. Most of the time, they're just very stupid rhyming couplets like, if you're an MC, these aren't my bars. Llamas in pajamas, you know, like nuns on the run, nuns with bums with guns. You know, loads of different silly rhyme, you know, trumping and stuff like that. And that kind of from there, I was just hosting this amazing art night. We used to get, it's still operating, obviously not for the past year. We're coming back there, but we'd get local artists down. And so we'd have a couple of live artists, my good friend Rev Austin, DJing, and just people drawing on the tables. And quite honestly, I've never been so enthused, excited, and terrified from some of the drawings that people draw when you say you can draw anything, right? The easiest way of getting someone to draw is do this. Just draw that, right?
I wasn't going to say anything, but the first thing I thought was a cock.
Yo,
time, ladies and gentlemen.
I think, Pete, we've got to the point of the podcast where we can try some beers. Now, are you... Now, unfortunately, my beers haven't arrived, so you're going to be drinking on your own, mate. But I'm glad they arrived for you and not for me anyway. So.
Do you know what's in here, then?
So I know what's in here. So we're going to play a game called Daft or Craft now. So there's two beers, okay. And they've both got really weird and wacky names, and I've made a weird and wacky name up. So it's on you, Pete, obviously, to weigh up which one I've made up. Are you ready?
Okay, so which one is a fake beer?
Which one I've made up, which one's fake. Yeah. So I'm going to read them out to you, and then you open the beers, okay?
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so the first option, Pete, Answer to the Cosmos. Second option, Tripping on El Dorado. Third option, Woodstock Rock If We Could.
Okay, interestingly, I've worked in several bars in my time, and we've had some very, very, very strange names. We had one called I Love You, Will You Marry Me? And I guarantee you, no man from 18 to 40 will ask you for that beer, right? Can I have that beer? Can I have that? What's the name, mate? Sorry, what's the name? I love... Oh, mate, what a nice question. Hilarious. I think the fake one is... What's the El Dorado one?
I'll read them all out to you again. So we've got
I'm going to try and Derren Brown you.
Answer to the Cosmos. Tripping on El Dorado. Woodstock Rock if we could?
I think El Dorado is the fake.
Are you locking that answer in, Pete Obsolete?
I will lock that answer in. That was Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, by the way. Yeah. I'm going to lock in on El Dorado
that I made up. Your first option of tripping on El Dorado is wrong.
Oof.
That is a real fear. But out of Answer to the Cosmos and Woodstock Rock is good, which one do you think is made up by me? Okay, so the real one is Answer to the Cosmos.
Yes.
Okay. Open those beers up, my friend.
Is it one massive beer? Was it like two beer?
It was. No, it's a big log cardboard box thing, and it's got two beers in it. I hope. Anyway, I hope you haven't got bloody lampshade.
You just got a stubby at the bottom.
Okay,
love that packaging for the record. This is lovely.
Nice, isn't it? From a place called Hopley. A place called Hopley in London. Really, really good craft beer place.
Very nice indeed. I'm like, you know, a standard kid at Christmas who will, like, leave the present and just look at the wrapping paper, standard.
Oh, yeah. Love that. I've never thought about it like that, but of course you will.
That's Cosmos. Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful artwork.
Nice. Well, that's why I chose it to be. I was like, you'll like that. Answer to the Cosmos is real.
Oh, tripping on there.
There we go. El Dorado was real. So you got it right a second time, Pete. Woodstock Rock, if we could, was made up by me. But you've got two beers there to try. I wish I was trying them with you. But which one do you want to go for first?
Okay, what are we having first and foremost? So we've got DDH Pale.
So where's Tripping from El Dorado brewed? Has he got the brewery on there?
S43.
Nice. Nice can as well. A little bit more understated than the other one, but yeah.
Got hints towards that kind of the room font, which I like.
Mm.
Right, so I'm going to go with this one first because this one's going to be way fruitier. So, yeah, Citra Mosaic and Matuga, yeah. Lovely. All right, so I'm going to try the Tripping El Dorado.
Good. Okay, I want you to give me a brief overview of what you think about it, and then I want a rating out of 10 as to how much you like it.
That's really, really nice. All right. For the record, I haven't had a beer for a while. I think the last one was Christmas, actually. Just trying to, you know, stay focused and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, it's like Eddie Murphy says, you know, if you haven't had any food, if you're starving in the desert and you have a cracker, it's like the best cracker in the world. This is genuinely really, really tasty. I love me a pale ale. I think it runs in my family. My man used to love a pale ale. But this is genuinely really nice.
Like it. Looks good, that, you know.
Nice and cloudy. That's tasty, that. Very, very kind of lemony. Mm. Got that lemon edge, but not too kind of invasive. It's not too fizzy. This is my kind of beer, you know. I'm not even kidding. That's wrong.
Like it. What would you, as you drink a little bit more, what would you rate it out of 10 then?
I'm going to say 7.5.
Right? Hey, that's a good score. That's a good score.
Yeah. Good beer, you know.
Like it. Enjoy it. I mean, first beer in, what, nearly 3 months. So good luck. 4 months, bloody hell. Really,
genuinely really tasty.
Good on you. Good on you. Answer to the Cosmos. What, nice.
Okay, this is a bad boy. Okay, 7% hazy IPA, Citra Mosaic and Matuga hops. I mean, it sounds amazing, but it sounds like I'll be asleep at the end of it.
7%. Wow.
Smells insane.
Looks insane. Smells insane.
Wow. Yeah, yep. That's a taste. That's a taste bracket. Yeah, that's lovely. I don't want to get too knobbed about it. I've worked in bars for years, so I've tasted and sampled loads and loads of different beers. So if I'm getting a bit, the mango is delightful.
I can't articulate myself that well to be able to do that. So yeah, do it. You know what you're.
I won't be able to after 7%. okay, that would make a fantastic shandy. I know that's sacrilege right now. Don't tell LHG. Sure. That's beautiful. And very, very drinkable. All right, super, like zesty and quite flat. Again, not like bubbles. It doesn't like hurt to drink. You know, if you take more than one sip and stuff,
yeah.
You don't want to take more than one sip. That's a sippy beer. That.
What are you rating out of 10? And which one do you prefer?
Okay, so, I mean, for taste, the Answer to the Cosmos is an 8. It pushes that bit of Citra, the Citra hop in it. I just love. I like fruity tastes. So that kind of is just a really, really nice taste. Overall, I'd say Drippin' to El Dorado, simply because I can have more than one. It is a really, it's a really, really nice taste. That sounds stupid coming from a 6'6" guy, but that's life. So I'd start with this and then probably finish the rest of the night off with that, because it's just tasty.
Nice.
But yeah, both of them, really, really good choices. And very, very creative names. I thought you'd watched The Road to El Dorado last night and been like, what can I think? I need a pun.
What a film, by the way. What a film that is. Yeah. The horse, and I can't remember what they're called, but yeah, what a great film that is. But yeah, no, I mean, what do you... You mentioned that you like those two beers, so I'm buzzing with the choice there. Mine will probably arrive tomorrow, so I'll let you know what I think.
Yeah, please do, mate. Yeah.
What do you normally drink on a night out, though, Pete?
I would drink something like this, genuinely. I'd probably... I'd only have a couple of beers. I've kind of, my palate has grown up a little bit. I've worked in wine bars and sherry bars, and kind of found, simply from working in Flock in town, which was a sherry bar, it started as a sherry-based, but obviously we've got beers and really nice wine as well. But wine and sherry are very, very similar. Sherry is fortified wine, kept in casks, kept in whiskey and different types of casks and stuff. So even getting those taste brackets, and obviously serving sherry, I didn't have a Victorian moustache or anything. This is the centre of town. I'm wearing pretty much what I'm wearing now, and serving people sherry was really abstract. And that kind of, again, that creativity comes back, because it's something that isn't the norm. It's something that I don't know about, so it's kind of exciting to find out. And again, it's so interesting, the kind of the we had talks from the Tio Pepe guys, who were one of the suppliers for us. And it's just really, really interesting and a fantastic summer drink. So my palate's checked. No one cares about a sherry right now. But I would probably end my night on something a little bit more like that. Maybe a Pedro Jimenez sherry for my last drink. But again, if I was on a beer night, it would be something very, very similar to Mr. Tripping here, just because of how fresh it is and just how clean that kind of it's definitely, it tastes like a pale ale. It reminds me of summer immediately.
You mentioned Flock then. Is that in Stevenson Square?
Yeah, mate. Yeah. Just
I've interviewed Martin, the current manager.
Big Martin, man. Yeah. Missed that guy. Yeah, he's a crazy dude. I love him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good man. Love Flock. Last night, I was doing a little bit of research on you, obviously, and you have obviously mentioned the emceeing side of it, and I was listening to your SoundCloud, and mate, I don't know why you don't rave about it as much. I was listening to Firewater, I was listening to Question Time, and I was like, this is good, man. This is really, really good.
Interestingly enough, let me just take another sip of beer. Thank you very much. That's really nice to hear.
No problem.
That beer. Lovely. The other thing about RPAs as well, just really quick, going back to RPA, if you are MCing and DJing, or if I'm hosting and rapping, you want something fresh and refreshing at the same time. I'm going to rave about it a bit. Okay. The rapping kind of started, just the fact that you mentioned in some track lists from, I think it was 2012.
Yeah.
The Upside Down Heads. It's called the Upside Down Heads because I have no hair and a beard, so my head's upside down. I don't rave about them because they're 8 years old. And I've had an album called Carmelade waiting in the wings for the past, I did a full run of T-shirts, all the T-shirts sold in about a month or whatever. 6 years, or was it 5 years later? Still no album. Which is, I find, quite hilarious. But there is more music coming. I'm just kind of waiting to, I need to film a video or two for Carmelade.
Yeah.
But again, Carmelade is kind of a bit more of a reflective album. Still in that kind of boom bap hip hop, stable and produced by, I've got some amazing producers, man. I absolutely love it. Pro P, who produces for so many different people in Manchester. He's like the UK DJ Premier. So if you'd like Gangstar or any of the work of DJ Premier, please check out Pro P. He's got beat tapes that you can just cipher and rap over. But he produced Upside Down Heads, produced about six tunes from Carmelade. Honestly, this guy, I just go round and he plays me 2 seconds of a beat. I'm like, I love it. And he'll play 2 seconds, I love it. He's got a magic in his production, man. It's insane.
Yeah.
And shouts to Man Cub and Blizzard as well. Going back to Don't Flop, Blizzard's got a few tunes on. Well, I think he's got one tune on Carmelade. So yeah, there's new stuff coming. But I don't go back to it because I hear how old or how young I sound in that. And I think I've just worked on my flow and cadence a little bit, and kind of even the physical writing structures a little bit more researched, if that makes sense. You know, a bit more knowledge just from listening to Wu-Tang and listening to Method and famous. You know, my favorite people are basically Method Man, Method Man, Roots Maneuver, Jest, and Charlie Tuna, and Busta Rhymes, and Redman. So that kind of era of hip hop. Well, they all come from a similar era. It's that kind of, I just love it. I know it's a side project, but it's one of those things that it's like drawing. I feel like it's in there and man's got bars.
Mm.
I've got loads of different verses that I've always felt like if you're writing, it should end up being made because you're writing. It should have a purpose. It should have a finished thing, certainly if it's hip hop.
Like it's funny, isn't it, the rabbit holes that you end up going down after listening to your music. I ended up listening to Lunacy, I ended up listening to Blizzard. I know one of Blizzard's tunes from years and years ago. I think he did it with Shaka, and I was like, I'm not listening to this.
Which tune?
I can't remember. It was featuring Shaka, and I can't remember, but it's got a really, really, really catchy beat. Do you reckon if I asked you to recite some bars from Fire Water or Question Time now, do you think you'd be able to do it?
Of course. One of the things about being a creative with a year on pause is that my bars just go around. Yeah, I mean, if you want to, I'll spit one of my new ones out of that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because I was looking at Carmelade, and I was like, has he released it yet? Because I couldn't find anything on it. But now I'm glad to hear.
Where do you see the word or the image of Carmelade? Instagram deep search.
I must have been deep on your Instagram, mate. Yeah.
Good work. That's 5 years of scrolling. So yeah, I appreciate it. Do not double tap. Slide up in my DM. Amazing. Okay, let's do. I'll do Brothers in Arms if I can remember. Question Time. I'll do that as well. So this is just. Are you out of the 16? What do you want?
Yeah, man. Go for it. Honestly, I'm all ears.
Thank you. There's a magic in the ether, so I write with a mix of pen and telekinesis, pulling tricks out the wide brim. You should know I'm psychic. I feel a dark energy between us rising, and it's amplified when the light shines blinding. We always stay connected like a synapse started firing, and walk with the elders of the tribe in hushed silence. If one man's missing, what on a mission to find Ryan? Leave no man behind. We walk with the prizes of life, death, and glory. They're the gifts of the Magi. Brothers not in blood, but in bonds swear allegiance, and close both eyes while scribing these ciphers in smoke-filled secret locations. No code words, handshakes, cloaks, or cryptic initiations. Just twist and spark to start to channel incantations. The mystic art, brothers, and I'm moving through this half-life.
Yeah, I fucking love that. Nice. So how do you, I mean, how the hell do you just sit that? Well, I know how, because it's what you do, isn't it? But wow, I love that.
Okay, it's a mix of pure inspiration from the people I've worked with. Like, there's no, I can't really, you know, I've written poetry and short stories and all that sort of stuff my whole life, but that kind of, you know, the kind of energy it takes to believe you can do it, let alone the energy it physically takes, is quite interesting. And I remember writing my very first bar, Firewater, was the very, very first thing I ever wrote. The first verse of that was like, I need to cover all the obsolete references and the darkness and the light in the branding and all that sort of stuff in one verse. And then ended up hanging out with my boy Cheech. Shouts to Cheech and the Blunskins. Went round to theirs. Went around to their studio in Wellington Mill. Unbeknownst to me, ETV turned up and were like, oh, we're going to film a cypher and you're in it. And I was like, okay. So I'm literally rapping next to four absolutely like stone, well, three other stone cold MCs. So Jack Goshen and Cheech from Mothership Connection, the hip hop group from Manchester. Double O from Mouse Outfit is in that group as well. Absolute flames. But I just had to come in off the back of Cheech.
Wow.
Absolutely killing a cypher. Like one of the best. I watch it almost every week still. And this was, you know, a good 4 or 5 years ago. Just in, well, probably more like 6, 7, 8 now. But yeah, he's just incredible. And there's a certain thing with Mancunian MCs. Their approach to the beat and the writing structure is just insane. Like Cheech is a, he's a close friend as well. I can't learn his bars. It's so strange. How he forms his links is just insane. So yeah, I mean, shouts to everyone doing something in Manchester. And you know, if you've worked with me, thank you for getting involved. And it's an honor, honestly, and continues to be an honor working now and trying to pick up a mic and do something that I'm really, it's not necessarily my thing. It's just something that I feel like, you know, you feel off the energy, you know what I mean?
Well, good that you've got the confidence to do it. I mean, me and my mates are a nightmare for it. As soon as we get pissed, we end up spitting bars to each other and stuff. And
my absolute favorite, there's a certain magic in that, in the cypher. So even, you know, even for the battle rap scene and the kind of the idea, it's like 8 Mile where you're rapping together, but it's English and there's no beat. So it's kind of a lot more personal. There's a real fire that just kind of sparks up when someone starts rapping. It's so strange. And you don't really get that. You don't even get it in the art world. Mm. I don't think there's very few other walks of life that can initiate that energy immediately.
Yeah.
Where you're defending and attacking at the same time. It's Kung Fu. It's literally Kung Fu. It's absolutely amazing.
Mm. So. I love that. And again, like,
I want to hear your rap, bro. You now, your go.
You can't put me on the spot like that. No chance.
the multi is tripping on El Dorado. You've got to make a scheme out of tripping on El Dorado. That's a whole other podcast, I think.
That is a whole other podcast. I'll tell you what, I'm going to get you involved on. I want something from you, mate. I want something from you in terms of an intro music or an outro music for it.
I could pass you on to my producers. This is the thing as well. I there's part of me that still dreams of being a DJ. And you know, and being able to mix and kind of creating music and all that sort of stuff. I tried to mix once and got really into the music that was playing on my right deck, and really into the music on my left deck, and was just happy listening to them both. It was so foreign to try and like mix them. It was so weird.
Yeah, love that. Absolutely love that.
And let's have a cypher soon. That'd be hilarious. Let's have a few drinks.
If I get pissed, I will do it all night for you, mate. 100%. And I've got a lot of mates
who wants to get involved with a cypher.
Definitely. And like I say, rabbit holes. I went down a massive rabbit hole last night and a couple of nights ago as well. So listening to Blizzard. I realise you used to work at Athletics Palace, a place which is synonymous with Manchester. You know, it had 20,000 weekly visitors, you know, before COVID, and I hope it gets back to that again. But you did an interview with Blizzard, didn't you?
I did. I used to run my good friend's shop. So shout out to Luke Manic Matty. So they used to have a shop called Manic Matty, and it was a really, you know, high end streetwear shop. I dropped my first run of t-shirts. They stocked them. Well, the first person was 9 Acre Court from way back in Athletics history, but I kind of had a stock in the shop that I was helping run and look after. Mm. You know, very easy to kind of move into the family of Athletics. Everybody there is just so warm and so welcoming, and it's a very independent vibe, independent energy. That's everybody feeds off that energy.
That's what it's all about, absolutely. I mean, I ended up watching again another rabbit hole, ended up listening to Clint Boone last night, just because he did a short documentary on Athletics, and I didn't know again the history of it and about being a place where you can collaborate and innovate and not be seen to be you know, weird in a way. That's why
it's really weird though, because as you said that, I was like, no way. I fell upon that realization quite late. So, you know, I was going to uni and we'd go around Athletics Palace and there'd be skate shops and kind of weird little corridors. Mm-hmm. And again, the character of the place, the aura that just gives off is just insane. Yeah. Secondhand shops, you know, jewelry shops next to kind of rave shops and, you know, piercing, everything. And then coming back to it as a business and actually working in there. And then I eventually had the first obsolete art house shop in there as well. Yeah. That Manic Matty then took over, which was a weird kind of swap. I absolutely love it in there. And the interviews for that you've seen with Blizzard was from the Dominic Matty ciphers, where, you know, this was peak Don't Flop time. So Don't Flop is a rap battle league that's still going just about, but it's kind of morphed a lot. But when it at its peak, they had a London set and a kind of Manchester set, loads of different collabs across the country. Blizzard was obviously one of the main MCs from Manchester. Shouts to Shotty Horror as well, the man, and Pamphlet and Delifer Riley. You know, we got people down, Black Josh and Easy as well. One of the best, you know, Chunks and Cheech as well. But the Sleazy, oh my God, Don't Flop and Words. Sleazy, his name is Sleazy F Baby now, but it used to be called Words. The Black Josh and Words cipher in the Medic Matty is one of my favorite things I could ever have been involved with. It might look quite small, two MCs in a small shop, but they're repping, they put my name in some bars and stuff, and it's just that kind of you know, here's the space, and then they give me back the kind of just the chufty points of having some incredible MCs wear my t-shirts, wear the glasses, wear the hats and stuff, and just kind of rep how you should rep. Do you know what I mean? It's just really, really nice.
Love
Blizzard's interview. I literally spoke to him about 2 days ago. I can't wait to go and see him and hang out and, you know, rap. And hopefully you're invited now, Connor, as well. So you get to rap about against one of the best freestylers I've ever heard. Like,
what have I got myself into here? Jesus.
Ready when you are, mate. Honestly, it's
I'll get involved. I'll get pissed. I'll get involved. Jesus.
Mate, I'll tell you a quick story. I was the artist for some of the Don't Flop stuff in Manchester. So I was drawing all the battlers and stuff and kind of selling obsolete and dueling and stuff. Yeah. Mate, there is nothing like choking on stage in the city where your brand is, with wearing your own brand t-shirt in front of a crowd that includes Blizzard was a judge, and we had, you know, Chronicle came up to me, one of the hosts came up and just said, oh, I've put a fiver in and you can get in the battle. I literally choked for 2 to 5 minutes straight, mate. It was so bad. And I always remember Blizzard for covering my back when it came to the judging. And this guy had like a Michelin Ness hat on, an American Apparel jumper, some skinny blue jeans and some blazers. I'm like, this is everything any battle rapper needs to diss, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was an acapella round. They put a beat on. I tried to fit in some bars to a beat. Died on my ass, mate. It was so bad. Blizzard was judging, and he said, I couldn't hit. Apparently, Blizzard said that the mic had broken. My boy. Nightmare. So even knowing that I've choked in a battle live on cam, literally for filming, means that you can then go and host anything because you're not in front of anyone. Do you know what I mean? It's a very unique reaction. Yeah, hilarious.
I die and want the ground to swallow me up when I'm watching that rap battle on 8 Mile when Eminem. When he chokes, it's like, oh no! But it's character building, mate. It's character building, like you said.
Again, there's that thing. If you're into your rap battle or you want to start getting into it, some people do choke. But again, once the crowd are always with them, they will always give the MC the time to get their bars back. And as soon as they do, you're back on side. It's this weird kind of support structure. It's absolutely beautiful, man. Yeah.
Okay. Sticking on the topic of music, I get every single guest who I interview on Erasing the Bar to go to the Erasing the Bar jukebox and put one song and one song only on, Pete. What are you
choosing? Ding dong. You're asking me for one song.
One song only. No judgment. Any song in the world. If you can put one on, what's it going to be?
How long have you got? I think, okay. That's really difficult. My go-to one song ever, like one song ever, 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 is Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush, right? That beat, that drive in the tune, let alone the kind of the beautiful loss in that song and the gain of love and stuff, absolutely insane. I think there's a Grammatic hip-hop remix of that beat. All time is a very, very big question, mate. I mean,
it's a difficult one. I never preempt the guest for this one, just because it's amazing. Sometimes you Oh, yeah, I've definitely got that when you're not thinking about it. As soon as someone asks you, your mind goes blank.
It's stuff like, okay, yeah, mate, I mean, it's not blank, it's what to choose and right. how how I can embarrass myself the least. things like Edge of 17 by Stevie Nicks, which is the sample for Bootylicious. That's that original song is just incredible. Obviously, you're talking to a guy who likes getting drunk and freestyling over anything. So things like Anti Up or even the new... If you asked me about an hour ago or 2 hours ago, I would have said the new Five Dog record with Redman and Busta Rhymes called Nutshell 2. It's a bit of a remix and obviously the features and stuff. Beats by Dilla, I think. And it's just an absolute beat. Like Five Dog with the intelligence, Busta with the bravado, yeah. Redman with the kind of crazy. It's just a really nice balanced tune. All Things to All Men by Cinematic Orchestra and Roots Maneuver. I've got who else is in there? I could just go through my record collection. At least 2 hours, mate. Right?
Your knowledge is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal of the beats and tracks. It's incredible. But if I had to put you on the spot and started counting down in 10, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pete Obsolete's favourite tune?
The Rock Wilder by Redman and Method Man.
Nice. So he's been backed into a corner. He's gone for it. I like it.
I went for it. There's a couple of reasons why. One, because it's a big boy, early 2000s hip hop, which... 1993 to about 2001 is the golden era for me. I love that era. The Rock Wilder, simply because the character of Meth and Red are very, very different, but Meth's Mr. Smooth, Red's Mr. Crazy, the video's fire, and I've actually done the electric slide to this tune at a DJ Shadow gig with my friend Austin. So there's this weird triple reason, and obviously I've got a twin brother. He was always Redman. I was always Method Man. standard white guy hip hop. there's a game called Rap Star. I think you heard of Rap Star?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
It's like rap karaoke, right? I wouldn't, normally I would poo-poo it, but my friend Austin, who I was electric sliding with, and my friend Gap Daddy in Sheffield, Gary, they got like number two in the world, or one of Austin's mates got number two in the world for Twister and Slow Jams on that game, and that rap is like insane. So there's a kind of
interesting. Bloody hell, we must have been doing that quite a bit. Jesus,
mate, I can't believe I'm admitting this. Pamphlet came around and we did Rap Star together. Pamphlet from Don't Flop, and then Shotty Horror again, MC from Manchester, one of the best representatives. Yeah. For Manchester, he's an absolute dude, Shotty Horror. He came round and he smashed a Rap Star, and then we were playing FIFA, and he asked me if I wanted to get a million views on YouTube. I was like, yeah, of course, I'm just starting my label, amazing. And he beat me 10-0 while freestyling, and that video will never go anywhere near YouTube.
But, yeah. I'll be pissed to try and get all of that. Definitely feel a rap battle and calling it a raising the bar, without a doubt. It's happening. We're doing it. Get in touch with everyone. We're doing it as soon as we can.
We'll write it down.
So we don't forget.
Raising the bar, Slifer, yeah?
Yeah, without a doubt. 100%. I'll leave that with you for the contacts. I'll speak to some of my mates and we'll get involved and we'll do it. We'll have a few drinks and we'll do it.
Maybe on scooters. Who knows?
Maybe on scooters. Class, right, Pete? We could talk for hours. Honestly, I'm so interested in what you do, but
it's a really nice interview as well.
Yeah, man, I'm enjoying it big time. But we've got to the point in the podcast where I kind of hand over the reins to you, and you tell me about your best drunk story that you've ever been involved in. I know this was a difficult one for you because you've got a few. Have you managed to nail one of them down?
Yeah, it's neither of the ones that I've sent you either. It's kind of a. Yeah, there's a few, parkour, trying to do parkour while absolutely battered in a festival in Berlin. Falling over, trying to do parkour again at my mate's mum's wedding reception. It's always parkour. for no reason. The story I'm going to go with is it was my birthday golden egg in 2015, and obviously having a finger or a few fingers and toes in the golden egg pie as a logo designer and poster designer, host, MC, you know, whatever. I got to choose the roster for my birthday, I think. And then, you know, it was a great time, standard birthday fare, you know, nice morning day, a couple of beers at lunchtime, you know, burger and chips, lads. And then it just started going sort of plateaued, and then it started going downhill when I was given a zombie sunrise, which was a zombie cocktail and a tequila sunrise in a 2-pint jug from Fletch. Shouts to Fletch. He used to run Fallow Cafe, and he looked after us so well at Golden Egg that we obviously had a really good relationship with him as a business. He was 6'6" as well, so I was just like, oh, tall friends. I literally remember standing on the stage, drunk, absolutely, you know, normal drunk for a hip-hop night, absolutely sound, maybe a little bit too over. And then Fletch coming over and giving me this 2-pint jar, me drinking a good buck of it, and then trying to hand it out so I didn't have to drink the rest, and everyone was like, I'm good. And then I just remember bits in like flashes where it got to the point where I was stealing the mic from 00. We had I can't remember if it was an official set or if it was a cipher. I'm praying it was just a freestyle cipher and we weren't part of the booking.
I prayed it was an official set.
Mate, I pray. I've been outdoor gigs with 00 as well, actually. He was playing, and then we had a drum guy come in and just tried to steal the mic, and I literally felt like this. Oh my god, it was so bad. I've just got a flash of grabbing the mic from 00 with a 2-pint cocktail in my hand, and then blacking out, remembering the walk home, and then nothing, and then sitting around Seymour's table till very, very, very early in the morning trying to work out what the hell was going on, and everything else is just a blur. I just remember stealing a mic from one of the best MCs in the country, in the city. Shouts to 00, amazing MC, Mouse Outfit, Voodoo Black, loads of different crews. The guys are done. Thankfully, we made up for it a couple of years later, on my 30th, when MOP were playing in Mint Lounge, I think. And it was like someone, again, had just asked me who I wanted to perform with. I was sponsoring the night through my shop and my clothing label. Wow. And it was just mental, mate. It was like MOP feature and then Mouse Outfit supporting. So I love the Mouse Outfit. I've done T-shirts. I've, you know, a lot of my glasses and stuff are featured in some of their videos. Sit Back is the video that I kind of do T-shirts and stuff with Black Josh and Truthos Mufasa. But mate, singing or rapping or trying to rap Ante Up with 00 here and MOP singing it in front of me, literally about 2 feet away, was just insane. There's some weird things that happen, you know what I mean? I just love it.
That's a cracker. And how, on a scale of 1 to 10 at that point, how pissed do you think you were? Do you think it was 10 out of 10?
Mate, I don't think I want to know me at 10 out of 10. I'm gonna go for a strong 9.5. All right, it wasn't complete, you know. There's been times at festivals in Berlin where I had to go and have a quiet word with myself, take myself out of the gig and go and have a quiet word with myself. It wasn't that bad. Yeah. So I'm going to sit at a 9.5 simply because I normally have an elephant brain memory. You know, it's just, I can replay the whole night. Yeah. That is one of the nights that I literally just remember the drink.
Yeah.
The walk home.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Like it was just, you know, birthday hip hop night, you know what I mean? What more can you ask for?
Hey, if you're gonna get that bad or that drunk on a night, it's gonna be your birthday. So I feel like you deserve it.
And I'm a cheap drink, yeah. I'm a cheap date. I mean, and so it's kind of it was already heading that way anyway. But then the double cocktail really just last nail in the coffin there. And the fact I was like, please drink it, please. Again, shouts to Golden Egg, shouts to all the amazing MCs that we've had on at Golden Egg. Insane.
Nice. Love it. That's a good story. That at the end of the series, we're going to pin them up against each other, all the other guests and their drunk stories in there. All this is going to vote for the best one. So Yeah, I think you're in with a good chance. I think you're in with a good chance. And then finally, as we get towards the end of the podcast, unfortunately, like I said, I want it to finish. But have you managed to narrow down your favourite bar, pub or nightclub in the UK that you can talk out a little bit and just nominate for our list?
I have. I've thought long and hard about it because, again, I've been in a very privileged position where I've got to work directly as an artist with a lot of really, really good bars. Any bar that I've worked with kind of realizes within the first 30 seconds of meeting me that I'm an artist. So I'm always keen to get involved with the staff team if I'm working there and obviously starting the quiz and all that. I want to shout a few people out as well as the final. So I'll build up to the final one, if that's all right.
Of course.
I've got a list here of just three. So first off, I want to shout out El Capo. All right, El Capo NQ on Instagram, a Mexican bar. Shouts to Nick. I've been working with these guys for a couple of years, and it's the first bar that's got a full obsolete takeover. So I think there's on pretty much every wall, there's an obsolete piece or some signature lines and stuff. That all came from a Red Bull event where I drew on a fridge. The fridge then got given to El Capo. El Capo liked the patterning, so then they rang me. So again, it's this kind of small world, you know, nepotism that is just incredible in Manchester. I love it. The second shout is Fallow Cafe. I've mentioned it a few times with the Golden Egg. Literally the perfect venue if you're a local hip-hop act, and so, or if you're awkward about getting in ciphers, picking a mic up. I was exactly the same. It's a very small, it's got a stage and then a small performance area on the stage. And then obviously the crowd, it's not crazy. It's not massive. It sounds really good. It feels like you're in New York. It has a very, very specific, cool vibe and a very, very infamous smoking area. I'll put it like that. Some incredible people, smells, you know, things happening outside. Absolutely incredible there. And then obviously my all-time club experience. This isn't the final choice. I'll come back to that. My all-time clubbing experience was a mix between Sankey Soap, when it was Sankey Soap. The poster here is from there. When they used to run hip-hop nights. That's a Razel poster. And then and Store Street Warehouse Project. There is nothing more attractive to the obsolete than watching hip-hop and rave music and dance music in an underground air raid shelter, under red brick arches air raid shelter underneath Piccadilly Station. You can't design that. You feel part of the music scene just from being in the queue. You don't have to be drunk or screwed up or whatever. It's just, you just feel part of that world, and I miss that. I cannot wait to go back and get back to park life and warehouse projects and all that sort of stuff. It's a very exciting time right now. My final decision on the UK's Best Bar nomination. I realise there's clubs and bars and all that sort of stuff in there, but I want to shout out Mary and Archie's in Didsbury. There are many, many reasons why I love that place. It was one of the first places I worked when I moved to West Didsbury. But honestly, that kind of, there's a very humble aura to it. And it kind of, I think there's a lot of different bars in West Didsbury, or there certainly is now. That's been there a lot longer than any of the other guys. And obviously from working there and hosting the quiz and getting involved with the art and stuff, shouts to Ellie, who's the owner, and Bev and her brother, and Ellie's brother Tom for the business. She told me something that kind of really inspired me and kind of blew me away a little bit as well. She said that she designed the bar as a customer. It's not specifically about the beers and all that sort of stuff. Very, very cool little kind of, you know, suburban bar. Mm. That is designed for the customer. I love that. It's designed so it feels nice to be in. Nice. You know, 70s vibe, playing alt J and you know whatever, loads of different types of music, few cheeky lock-ins and a few quiz nights and a lot of fun. Really good music taste. Really, really, really good music taste. Amazing beer. It's where I get all my sippy knowledge from as well. Yeah. And again, the smoking area around the corner. You know, you can have chats with locals and people. I bumped into James Nesbitt came around once. Nice. John Thompson. We need two more for the Cold Feet bingo card. Yeah. But meeting James Nesbitt was amazing. He was just dead fun and really kind of Yeah. It was just there in front of me. I was like, oh, Mr. Nesbitt, I presume. He was like, oh, call me Jimmy. I will, mate. Just really friendly, really nice. And again, that kind of it is a testament to the vibe in the bar itself. Mary and Archie's Didsbury, please go and check it out when you can. And also get some food from them. They have amazing shifts.
100%. And honestly, I'm glad that you've been through so many of those, because there's three out of the four I've done Store Street Warehouse Project, but the other three I've used them. So I'm definitely keen to get involved and get there. El Capo 100%, because it's not too far away from me, and I've heard really good things, especially around the tequila, and I'm a massive tequila fan. So let's arrange a couple of nights out.
Cypher, let's go. Okay,
without a doubt. great suggestions there, so I'll be sure to add them to the list as well, Pete.
I literally can't wait to just be in a gig, and instead of missing the, it's not like I'm missing the big bits of it anymore. I'm missing being pushed in the back by the fat guy in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
The little details of it, like standing at the bar, getting annoyed at waving a tenner. I can't wait to be annoyed again.
I can't wait for someone to push in front of me, and I'll turn him around. I'll be like, we're back.
Yeah.
We're back, mate. And I'll hug him. I'm not hugging anyone. Yeah.
I hope that happens, man. That'd be amazing. Yeah.
I can't wait. You've got some, you know, stunning pieces of artwork on your website. I mean, I think it'd be stupid not to mention where people can get these pieces of artwork, and how can people get in touch to you know, send objects to you to personalise?
Interesting. Please just slide up in my DMs, quote unquote, Mr. Connor here. Honestly, just send me a message on Instagram or Facebook, even on Twitter, but Instagram and Facebook. You could email me as well. That's all on the socials as well. And any requests, you know, I'll always look at requests and be honest with you. I mean, the most annoying thing is when people bring old trainers. I've had people literally stand in front of me and take the shoe off they're wearing and just give it me to draw on. And as much as I'm, you know, humbled by the fact you want me to draw on your trainer that you've been walking around in for 8 hours, there is a certain quality that kind of gets lost from anything other than the fresh trainer. Sorry to overkill it. It's just something that has happened. If you do want an actual trainer, please, honestly, get in touch. I might be able, we can obviously talk and sort out the trainer, discuss what the design is you want, any colours you guys can customise as well, any little hints. Again, I think if you do check out my social medias and certainly my Instagram, you'll see how I approach everything as a canvas. If you like it, please give me a shout out. Yeah, amazing. The other stuff is obviously the wall art and the kind of the canvas work. That's all on houseobsolete.bigcartel.com. I am changing that very, very soon, but for now it is houseobsolete.bigcartel.com. Most of the work is on there. There's a few secrets that are hiding in my studio right now that I'm sitting on for a minute, but please check out the work, and there'll be, you know, a whole new range of merch coming out. So I'm looking at hats. I'm going to drop a few more t-shirts, potentially some shades and some beach wear. So please look out for that. And yeah, give me a shout at Will. And if anyone's got any artwork of you guys that you want to send me just to celebrate art and stuff, please also do that. And check out the Paint with Pete's if you are looking for an hour of creativity. It doesn't really matter what level you're at in art. I always say, whether you're Tony Hart or terrible at art, so it's literally anything goes, right? Please check out Paint with Pete. That is on my YouTube, obsolete formats. Do you want to do the socials? Should we do the social tagging bit? Or
Do the socials.
Is that all right? Do it. All right. Okay. Hello. I'm Pete Obsolete and Obsolete Formats MCR on Facebook. I'm also Pete Obsolete and Obsolete Formats on Instagram. I'm also Snob Ross on Twitter, and I am Obsolete Formats over on YouTube. And again, all the Paint with Pete's, the whole year of the Paint with Pete's is on YouTube. So if you do find yourself getting a bit bored or want to see what I do in the Paint with Pete's, please just check them out, give them a like and subscribe, share anything you'd like. Thank you very much.
Love it. This isn't your first rodeo.
Last orders at the bar.
Pete, it's been honestly an absolute pleasure to get to know you more, and I've just my brain is bursting with collaboration ideas. We've got a raise in the bar en route. We've got, well, we know what we're looking at. So thank you, thank you so much for coming on. It's been
absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me, man, and thanks for the chat. Really nice interview.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I hope you've enjoyed it, and make sure you go and check out Pete's work, because it is phenomenal. And yeah, we'll see each other soon for that drink.
You will indeed, mate. Yeah, Sam, see you soon. Really good interview, bro.